Good evening. Glad to be back with you this evening. Can't tell you how thankful and appreciative I am to be able to be a part of a congregation to where if I happen to be not feeling well in the morning, that I got folks that I can call or text and know that they'll be able to step in and fill in for me, and that provides a level of comfort that I haven't known in other places. It's nice to be a part of such a congregation and to have that confidence in my colleagues and my elders and all of you. How many here have never struggled with your faith? You've never struggled with your faith. You've never questioned anything. You've never had any doubts whatsoever. You know that everything's going to be all right regardless of what's going on around you. You haven't had to lean upon anyone to reassure you that you're doing what's right and that following God is where you need to be. I don't see any hands. Maybe it's because we've all struggled at some point with our faith. After all, we're no better than Peter. We're no better than anyone else that has struggled with their faith in the past and has had to struggle through some things and come to an understanding of some things. But friends, one thing that we can do and we can look at Peter, we can look at Paul, we can look at any number of folks that we read about in the Bible, Old Testament and New. We can draw some parallels and we can look at examples to help us strengthen our faith. And that's what I want us to do tonight. I want us to look specifically at a man by the name of Gideon. I hope that we're familiar with Gideon as he was one of the judges that we read about, and him specifically in Judges chapter 6 and 7. And we'll get to Judges here in a moment, but I want you to turn with me first to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Now, in Hebrews chapter 11, we find what we often refer to, or many often refer to, as the Hall of Faith. It is a who's who list of those that had remained faithful to God throughout the Old Testament, under the patriarchal law, then going into the Mosaic law. And this is a chapter, a portion of this book that is dedicated to helping the Hebrews see that they can remain faithful unto God under the new law. Because these had done it so far behind them or in front of them. And in chapter 12 and verse 1, that's why the Hebrews writer says, seeing we are also, or we also are encompassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. That is, everybody that he had just mentioned in chapter 11. In Hebrews chapter 11, looking at verses 32 through 34, we read some names here. And what shall I say more, or what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, and of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turn to flight the armies of the aliens. Now, Gideon's name is simply mentioned here, as are David and Barak and Samson, and we can read more of their lives as we read through the Old Testament. But friends, it's something at least to be mentioned here in Hebrews chapter 11, but not just of them and of the prophets, he concludes there. That's why he talks about stopping the mouths of lions. David had done that, but you also learn there of Daniel, quenching the fire. You learn there of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, walking through fire that they had been cast in. But here Gideon is mentioned. And he is one, I believe, friends, that while we may never head an army, we may never lead a bunch of folks in the battle, I believe we can identify with Gideon. As you read through the book of Judges, and you read Judges chapter 6 and 7, I think you'll notice that Gideon is the only judge out of all 15 who struggled with his faith is really discussed at length. You see moments of doubt in the other judges' lives, but there's no detail there as to why they were struggling with their faith, what they did to overcome it. We see that in detail with Gideon. We're given how it is that he came, he became a judge, and he led his people to battle to overcome this oppression that had come upon them. Friends, we can identify with that. We have struggles and problems as well. We suffer from fears, from anxieties, from apprehension, from anger at times. I have faults. I'm not perfect. We all have faults. We're not perfect. Gideon had faults. He was not perfect. We can identify with that, friends. And I think through that, we can have a deeper and stronger faith, knowing that here was a servant of God. Ultimately, he did what God called upon him to do. They're human. You read about, in Hebrews chapter 11, you read about Abraham. You read about Jacob. You read about Isaac. You read about a few of the women that found grace in the eyes of the Lord. You read about Moses. You read about all of these people. Friends, we need to realize they were human. They had struggles just like us. Great giants of history. They all struggled with many of the same things that you and I struggle with. We can draw from that. We can find strength in that. Because here we read about them on the who's who list of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. They followed God ultimately. Now let's go to Judges chapter 6. And let's see, friends, what we can learn from Gideon on how and what we need to do maybe to strengthen our faith, even if it's just a little bit. Judges chapter 6. Now here, the Israelites in this particular region had been being oppressed for about 7 years. And I don't know at this point if they realized that full realization had come upon them that hey, we brought this on ourselves. We forsook God. He did not forsake us. I don't think that they had come to that realization just yet, simply because of some of the things that Gideon says here. As we read Judges chapter 6, you begin to see this man called Gideon. As you begin chapter 6, you think, why in the world did God choose this man? He's not willing to just drop everything and do as God tells him to do right off the bat. Does that remind you of anybody? A man whose name was Moses? He tried to get ahead of God when he was 40. God said, you're not ready. So he fled into the wilderness, took another 40 years getting ready, and at the age of 80, when God says, okay, it's time, Moses says, I'm not ready to go. That's Gideon here. God comes to him, and he refers to him as a mighty man of valor. And then as God or this angel begins to talk to Gideon, you're wondering what in the world God sees in this man. Let's read a few verses together. We'll start at verse 1. Look at this oppression and we'll go through chapter 6 and we'll dig a little bit into Gideon's background. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them in the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens, which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. So the oppression had become so bad that the Israelites were fleeing in front of the Midians. They were going to hide from them and living in caves. Verse 3, and so it was when Israel had sown that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites and the children of the east, even they came up against them, and they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth till they come into Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers from multitude. For both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it.
And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And it came to pass when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel. Now God's going to tell them why they're suffering these things. He sent a prophet unto them. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you forth out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But ye have not obeyed my voice. They had left God to serve idols. When everything was going great, their crops were growing very well, and they were getting an abundance of food and such. Their riches were continuing to grow. They said, God, we don't need you anymore. And they attributed their success not to the God of heaven, but to the gods of the Amorites. And so God was going to teach them a lesson. So he brought upon them the Midianites. Verse 10, and I said unto you, we read that one. Verse 11, and there came an angel of the Lord. Here enters Gideon. And sat under an oak which was in Ophrah, and pertained to the Joash, the Abizurite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. Where was this mighty man of valor? He was hiding. He was hiding. Have we done that before? Didn't know where to turn, didn't know what to do, and so we locked ourselves in our house and we just didn't go out for a day or two. Hiding from the world, hiding from our friends, maybe even hiding from our spouses at times. Maybe because we were struggling with our faith. We didn't know what to do, didn't know where to turn, not understanding that if we would just turn it over to God, that if we would cry unto God as Israel had done, Israel realized that they needed help. And so they cried unto God. And God, before He would help them, He needed them to know something. Here's why you're in trouble. Sometimes, friends, we have to realize that sometimes maybe we're struggling with our faith. Maybe there's something going on. Friends, sometimes we need to understand. Now, this isn't the case all the time. Sometimes good people suffer for what seems no reason at all. That wasn't the case with Israel. And sometimes we need to realize that maybe we're suffering. Maybe our faith is being tested through no fault of anyone else's, but through every fault of my own. God needed Israel to recognize that and to come to terms with that before He could help them. And so He talks to Gideon there in verse 11. An angel of the Lord appeared, verse 12, unto him and said unto him, the Lord is with thee. Notice how he refers to him. Here a man in hiding now, thou mighty man of valor. God recognized something in Gideon before Gideon ever recognized it in himself. God referred to him as a mighty warrior, and here he's talking to a farmer. I would go so far as to say, friends, that Gideon probably had never wielded a sword to this point. He was the youngest of his family. He was not one that was well respected in the community as of yet. He had not earned that privilege or that respect. He was a lowly farmer, following in the footsteps of his father. And so God says to him, thou mighty man of valor. Notice Gideon's response in verse 13. Sounds, again, a lot like Moses. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? See, Gideon doesn't quite understand the gravity of the situation here. He's asked God, he asked this angel, if God is with us, then what's going on here? And friends, I know that we've asked that question from time to time. If God is really with me, why is all this bad stuff happening? If God is really with me, why am I suffering in such a way? If God really loved me, this wouldn't be happening to me. Friends, remember the world in which you live. Remember Romans 3 and verse 23. We have all sinned and come short of the glory of God. And I would remind us again that the Israelites had brought this upon themselves. But what about those instances? I don't know that Gideon had ever forsaken God. We're not told that about his past. We begin reading of this young man when he's probably, he's still fairly young. We don't know much about his life up to this point. Gideon had probably never done anything himself to cause Midian to come down and oppress them as they had. And so Gideon asked the question, maybe this is echoing in his mind, what have I done? But as a whole, as a nation, Israel had gone against God, had sinned against God, and so he says, verse 13, he goes on, why then has all this befallen us, and where be all his miracles, which our fathers told us of? Saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. Do you ever feel forsaken by God? Where was God even at this time? Had He gone anywhere? No. And that's something that Gideon is going to come to realize. God had not gone anywhere, friends. And we need to understand that when we are feeling forsaken, when we are feeling maybe that God has turned His back on us for whatever reason, we need to remember that God hasn't gone anywhere. God is still God and He still sits on His throne. He still cares about His people, friends, and that includes you. What was God waiting on? 7 years Midian had been oppressing these people. When did God respond? When did God come to the rescue? When they asked Him to. Friends, I'm convinced that sometimes we suffer a lot longer than we need to because we're too prideful to ask God for help. We're too prideful to ask God for help, to take things to Him in prayer, to lay our burdens at His feet and allow Him to carry those things as He has promised that He would. Gideon's beginning to learn this lesson. That his faith does not need to be placed anywhere other than in the God of heaven. My friends, begin to consider these things with me. Gideon at first is a man filled with doubt. He doubts even now the angel's words. Why has all of this befallen us if God is really with us? Where are His miracles that our fathers told us about? They told us about our people crossing the Red Sea and it closing in upon Pharaoh. They told us about having to wander the wilderness for 40 years and their shoes and their clothes never wore out and they woke up every morning and food was on the ground. They told us about the great cloud and the pillar of fire by night. They told us about all. Where are God's miracles now? Gideon says. He's doubting. He needs something. He needs to trust in God. But it's going to take him a little while to get there. Friends, let this be an example of how God sees people. Remember, Gideon was a farmer. Probably had never wielded the sword at this point. He was not a warrior, we know. Had never gone to battle. He's the youngest one of his family. He doesn't necessarily, it seems, possess many or if any leadership qualities. And yet God looks upon him as a mighty warrior and a leader of people. He appears ill-equipped for the job, but God sees something different. God looks at potential. He can make something out of nothing. Verse 15,
After the Lord, in verse 14, says, the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? Verse 15, Gideon basically says, who am I? He said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. Who am I? That God would come to me and tell me to go and save Israel. Who am I? That sounds a lot like Moses, doesn't it? Moses at this time, regardless of what he had been able to accomplish in Egypt, he thought of himself as nothing but a poor shepherd. When God called upon him to go and lead the people out of Egypt in Exodus chapter 3. Gideon foresaw failure in himself based on his own inadequacies. You look at the examples of that throughout the Bible. You look at Moses. You look at a number of people in the book of Judges. And you see this time, Barak, for instance. Barak was not necessarily, he was, I guess you might call Barak a co-judge with Deborah. He followed Deborah's lead. She had told him that God told Barak through Deborah to go and do something, and Barak says, I can't unless you go with me. Felt that he needed help, even though he had God on his side. You look at those examples. And friends, sometimes we look at ourselves and we look in the mirror and we recognize that we have some shortcomings. Maybe I'm not the best at singing. But friends, God didn't require any less of me because I can't carry a tune in the bucket. He still requires me to sing. Maybe I'm not the wealthiest, but he still calls upon me to give my means. Maybe I'm not the smartest, but he still calls upon me as a Christian to be able to sit down and share the gospel with someone else. We may have our shortcomings, friends. We may ask the question at times, who am I? Friends, remember this. As you study Moses, as you study Gideon, as you study Peter, as you study Paul, as you study the Bible, remember this. It's not about you. It's not about you. It's about God. It's about the Lord. It's about Jesus Christ. It's about Him working through me. It's about what God can do through me. Notice who responded, verse 16. And the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. The Lord responded to him. Think about that, friends. And so Gideon, he says in verse 17, he's still doubting at this point. He's beginning to believe, but he still doubts it. So he says, basically, God, prove it. Prove it to me. And he asks for a sign. And so he goes and does as he's told to do. And Gideon, verse 19, he went in, he made ready a kid, unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot and brought it out unto him under the oak and presented it. And the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Verse 21, and the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. Gideon now believes. He understands that it was indeed God, an angel of God, the Lord, to whom he was speaking, that was telling him these things. But there's one other thing he needs to do. If he's going to save Israel,
Israel could not press forward without removing the source of their problems. The reason these things have been brought upon them. And so Gideon is told to go and destroy the idols. Take them out of the way. Friends, in this, in Gideon destroying the idols, even though they wanted to kill him the next morning, we see here a symbol of repentance of Israel. Turning their back on the idols, going back unto God. You look at verse 36, chapter 6. And Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel. Notice again the word if. After he's done all this, God has consumed the kid, the flesh of the kid, the cakes. He's seen that with his own eyes, and he says, if. He's not there yet. He's still struggling with his faith, and so he puts God to the test again with the fleece. One night he puts it out and he tells God, let there only be dew on the fleece. Another night he puts it out, let there be dew everywhere but on the fleece. And God does these, and so now he's ready to go. He's made a decision. But friends, I want us to recognize before we go further how patient and kind and loving God is toward Gideon. Time and again Gideon asked for proof, and time and again God provides it. He did the same with Moses. Moses said, who am I? Who shall I say sent me? He tells God that I need some proof. Throw down thy staff. It becomes a snake. Pick it up at the staff again. Put thy hand in thy bosom. Bring it out. It's full of leprosy. Put it back in. Bring it out. It's smooth as a baby's bottle. He did it with Moses and he's doing it with Gideon. Showing him that Gideon has nothing to fear. Because God is going to take care of their problems. God is making somebody out of a nobody. Romans 8 and verse 37 says, yet in all these things we are more than conquerors. How? Through Him who loved us. Friends, remember, it's about God. Focus on the who and not on the how. Gideon didn't have a clue as to how this was going to be accomplished. That's what it seems that he was focused on for so long, and God is trying to teach him, you don't focus on how. You just let me handle it. Let me take it. And so, number two, while we saw a man full of doubt, now we see a man with a decision made. Gideon, from this point forward, seems to be a changed man. He didn't look back. He began to understand finally that faith was not about the how, but about the who. It was about God. And so he goes and he puts out a call for men, and 32,000 respond, ready for battle. We're ready to go to war. So God says, Gideon, come here. You got too many. 32,000. You see, he had already taught these lessons to Gideon. Now he's going to teach the rest of Israel. He's showing Israel that they don't need to be placing faith in themselves or anybody else, but where does their faith need to be? In God. In the God of heaven. And so Gideon, you've got too many. You go and you tell everybody there that if they are scared, if they're fearful and afraid, you tell them just to pick up and go home right now. Now friends, I want you to put yourself in Gideon's shoes right now. Now, I understand that he's already made his decision. His faith is placed so and fully in God. I want you to place yourself in Gideon's shoes. You are now the brand new general of this great army that you've assembled. Now 32,000 is still nowhere near what Midian has, but you feel like you've got a fighting chance with 32,000 men. And God tells you, you've got too many. You go and tell them that if any are fearful and afraid, they pick up and go home. And you look up when you say, and as soon as you utter those words, 22,000, get up and leave. Think about that for a minute. I cannot imagine what must have been going through Gideon's mind. God, you told me to trust you, and you just took away 22,000 of my men. So I'm left with 10,000. God says, hey, Gideon, you still got too many. So take them down to the creek, and I'll tell you which ones you're going to keep. And he goes, as he takes them down to the river, to the creek, God tells Gideon that any that lay down to drink their water, you tell them to go home. You're only going to keep those that keep their weapons at the ready, and they scoop water with their hand, and they lap it like a dog. The reason being, those men are still ready to fight. So now this time, Gideon has the responsibility of sending 9,700 men back to their homes. His army has gone from 32,000 to 300. What's God teaching Israel? The same lessons that he's already taught Gideon. Place your trust in me. Don't worry about the how this is going to be accomplished. You just worry about letting me handle it. Now, friends, you think about that. In our minds, even as we're sitting here 4,000, 5,000 years later, this doesn't make sense to us, does it? That you would tell a man, 32,000, you can't win a war with 32,000, but you can win it with 300. You can't do it with 32,000 when your odds were maybe 5 or 6 to 1, but we're going to do it with 300 when your odds are now, every man is going to have to fight anywhere between 20 and 50 men by himself. It's going to test your faith, isn't it? That's the purpose. God is showing them His strength and His power. God is teaching Gideon and Israel to trust Him again. The decision of faith, friends, produces confidence in the one in whom that faith has been placed. Now, John Wesley, not an advocate of his doctrine at all, but I love this quote that he made. John Wesley once said, "Give me 100 men who fear nothing but sin and love nothing but God, and I will shake the gates of hell." Might go so far as to say, friends, with God on our side, when you look at maybe Caleb and Joshua, give me one man who fears nothing but sin and loves nothing but God, and you'll be able to shake the gates of hell. You'll be able to storm those gates, and there's nothing that can hold you back because God is on your side. The decision's been made. You think of Paul and what he had to say, "I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me." Is that our attitude? Is that our faith? Gideon's decision, friends, landed him in Hebrews chapter 11. And so we see a man full of doubt, a man that made a decision, and so that man now, who had his doubt removed, and he made a decision to place his faith in God, now he's a man that God can use to deliver Israel. And so God gives Gideon his orders. You go to the camp of the Midianites and you get ready for battle. But then even as he's getting ready, God says to Gideon, "I know you still got to be scared, and so here's what I want you to do. I want you to go down into their camp, told them a certain place to go, and I want you to listen." And Gideon heard of a dream. And the interpretation of that dream was that Gideon and Israel was going to defeat Midian that night. So Gideon goes back to his 300 men. This is all found in chapter 7. He goes back to his 300 men. And divides them into three companies, and they surround as much as 300 men can a camp that you can't count for locusts. They surround the camp, and here's their plan. Brilliant strategy. We're not going to take weapons.
We're going to take a lamp, cover it with a pitcher,
and a trumpet. That's all we're going to have. Where's their faith? Not in their weapons. It's not in their hand-to-hand combat skills. Where's their faith? It's in God. God can use that man because the doubt's been removed. He's made a decision to place his faith in God. And so God is able to use him to deliver. Look at verses 16 through 22. He divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand, with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. And when I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came into the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch. And they had but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers that were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow with all. And they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp. And all the host ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets. And the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. And the host fled to Bathsheba and Zerareth and to the border of Abel-Mola unto Tabith. God discomfited them to the point that they fought amongst themselves. Who ultimately fought that battle, friends? Who ultimately brought them that victory? It was not Gideon. It was not the 300 men that were with him. They did what God told them to do, and so God wrought that victory through them. That great victory over Midian. Reminds me a bit of 2 Kings chapter 6, in which the king of Syria was making war with Israel, and every time Elisha warns, his plans are thwarted. And so the king says, I'll get rid of Elisha. And he sends an army down to where Elisha was, and Elisha's servant is very fearful. And so Elisha prays a prayer in verses 15 through 17. That the eyes of his servant be open. And when the eyes of the servant are open in 2 Kings chapter 6, 15 through 17, what does he see? He sees the host of the Lord surrounding the armies of Syria. God was on his child's side. Elisha had placed his faith totally in God. Ultimately, friends, what Israel learned was that God doesn't need large numbers to accomplish his purposes. He took a nobody. In our eyes and everybody else's eyes, and made him a somebody. He took a farmer and made him a great warrior. He took a man full of doubt and turned him into a deliverer. Friends, we've all got shortcomings. We all struggle with our faith from time to time. But remember this. It's not about the how. But it's about the who. If we place our faith in God, He'll take care of the how. He'll take care of us. And our faith can be that much stronger. You think back to Hebrews chapter 11. And you go through that list. Why are all these people? Why is Gideon? Why are the rest of those people in Hebrews chapter 11? Why are they listed there? Every one of them, as God talks about them in Hebrews chapter 11, He says, by faith, and in what they are able to accomplish. Friends, what are you able to accomplish? You can't do it in and of yourself. Will it be said of us one day, will it be said of us by faith, Josh Romo, and then lives? By faith, and you place your name there. And then all your accomplishments. Giving the glory unto God. Friends, when you struggle with your faith, understand that God is there and He's willing to take on those burdens if you will but call on Him. God was always willing to help Israel overcome Midian, but they had to ask Him. They had to come to Him. They had to cry out to Him. So friends, when we're struggling, when our faith is being tested, cry out to God. Go to God in prayer. Hit your knees. And take your thoughts and your concerns and your struggles to Him. When we say that we have faith in the Lord and we go about living our lives in that way, friends, by faith says, I am nothing on my own. People who see the invisible choose the imperishable and do the impossible. You ever heard that? People who see the invisible, they choose the imperishable and do the impossible. That's Gideon. A man that was full of doubt, that made a decision to place his faith wholly in God, and because of that decision, God was able to turn him into a deliverer. Friends, as we put away our Bibles and we take out our psalm books, being ready to sing the invitation song here in just a moment, where does your faith lie? Does it lie in the works of the world or does it lie in the God of heaven? Where does your faith lie? Maybe it may be tonight that you're struggling with your faith. Friends, let us help. Let us help. There are a group of Christians here at 9th and Main that love you, that love your soul, that want to do nothing but help you overcome whatever struggles it is that you are facing in this life. Let us help. The friends, ultimately, give it to God. Let Him help. Friend, if you're here tonight, having never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, would you place your faith in Him this evening, doing as He has commanded? Putting Christ on in baptism, arise again to walk in a newness of life. Friend, place your faith in God. For it is there, in Him, that salvation is found.